Hello and welcome. Oh, good. We'll begin in just a moment. I think we've got some people in the waiting room.
Okay, let's let them all in.
There they go. A good evening. Hello to everyone.
Hello.
You'd like to put in the chat where you're from? We'd like to know.
Also, if you have not filled out our Google form, please fill it out. We'd love to learn a little bit more about you, and that also helps us tailor our discussion as well. I just put it in the chat. Let me put it in there one more time, just in case. New Mexico, Las Vegas, Oakland, Loma Linda. Great group.
Oh,
Amazing.
great. We have people from excellent from Loma Linda. Very wonderful.
Ooh, Central Florida, amazing. North Carolina.
Chicago.
Wow.
Welcome.
Charleston, oh, amazing.
Yes. From your alma mater,
Yes.
my current pharmacy student.
Oh, great. All right, thank you to everyone who's putting, where they're from in the chat and for everyone, tuning in live with us. It's amazing. It's going to be recorded, so don't feel like you need to take any notes. We'll be sending the recording to everyone. Oh, Manchester, Vermont. Oh my gosh, it's so beautiful there. Amazing.
Well, I'd like some of you I know and some of you I don't. I'd love to like wave hello to everyone that I know and look forward to getting to know others. Thank you, especially for the people that have their videos on so I can see you. And we'll just start in a couple minutes. Actually, more like 1 minute. We appreciate you being on time. So Dr. Swathi has put a Google form in the chat. If you'll see that, we'd appreciate if you haven't filled that out to do that sometime during the webinar. Well, we are going to start out by introducing ourselves and then a little bit about integrative health and how we started working together. It's a great story that I enjoy saying over and over. Makes me happy each time. And then we'll talk about some regulation, some concepts in integrative health, maybe some specifics also that we wanted to present to you. And then we'll see where the discussion goes. When one of us is talking, the other will be monitoring the chat. So if you want to put something in the chat, either privately to us or to the group, that would be great. We'll hopefully have time to answer all the questions that you have. Good. Well, welcome everybody.
So amazing to see so many people on video. I love it.
Yeah, thank you
Yeah.
very much. Good. And so I think we can get started now.
Sounds good.
And so welcome, welcome. This is an intro to Integrative Health 101. My name is Dr. Pam Tarlow. I'm a pharmacist, and my colleague is...
I'm Dr. Swathi Varanasi. You can call me Swathi, Dr. Varanasi, any of the above. And I too am an integrative pharmacist.
Great. So I'll start with some letting you know a bit about us. I feel it's very important, whoever I learn medicine from in any capacity, I want to know where they're coming from. That in it just helps me to take in what they say and also discern what they say. And I hope you will take it in and discern as well. So please go ahead, Dr. Swathi.
Absolutely, yes. So a little bit about me. So, you know, I grew up in New Jersey. I grew up in a family that used Ayurvedic formulations just as often as we used over-the-counter and prescription options. And so to me, healing, health, and wellness has always been a very multifaceted, multi-prong experience. And at the end of the day, a very patient-centric experience and a very scenario-specific experience too. So depending on how we were feeling or what was going on in our lives, maybe one time we turn to an herb and the next time we might turn to nutrition, but then the time after that we turn to a leave or a prescription. And so going through pharmacy school, I knew that this was something I was passionate about, but I didn't know any pharmacist, at least where I went to school. I went to the Medical University of South Carolina in Charleston, South Carolina, and there were not a lot of, you know, or really any integrative pharmacists. And so as I was crafting my API schedule, I was thinking about, okay, I want to make this the most comprehensive, interesting set of rotations. And I found Dr. Pam Tarlow, who you hear from right after me, and a little bit more about our story. And I found her and I found that she had actually been a part of our API program before. And so I reached out to her and asked if she had availability for me to come for an API rotation. And, you know, I flew out to LA at the time, of course, in South Carolina. So flew out there, did a rotation with Dr. Tarlow. Within the first few days was like, this is absolutely what I want to do. I finally found my place in pharmacy, which for so many years in pharmacy school was really not sure if it was the right path for me because I resonated with so much of the conventional information that was being taught, but I felt like there were some holes or some white space in some of the information. And I found to really fill that would be to be in integrative health or integrative medicine. And so had a chance to train with Dr. Tarlow. We started the first ever integrative health residency program for pharmacists interested in pursuing this, you know, still unconventional role. It was unconventional at the time, unfortunately still is, but with all of you here today, maybe it won't be in the near future, which I would love to think. And so, yeah, a little bit about me. That's really just my background. And, you know, since the residency have gone on, there's a few icons missing here and there from a few different parts of my path, but these are some of the, you know, institutions and organizations that I'm associated with now. I co-founded a botanical wellness company. And so we have products as well as education really focused on cannabinoid and botanical medicine and thinking about the evidence-based perspective to really help improve patient outcomes, but also improve healthcare provider education. And so that's Element Apothic. I also serve as principal investigator at Citrus Labs. Citrus Labs is a CRO or a contract research organization. And I also have the pleasure of being on quite a few advisory boards of PEARLS, of Realm of Caring Foundation, Sleep Advisor, as well as the Natural Medicines Database.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Swathi. Do any of you mentor students, can you imagine how I am feeling now with that list of what she's done since 2019? I'm very, very proud. And she's not the only student that I've had the pleasure of mentoring. A few of you are on this webinar right now. So I'm very happy to share with you and anyone who's willing to learn about some approaches towards integrative medicine. My story is that I am a pharmacist. I've always been a pharmacist. That's what I studied to be. That's what I still am. I'll be going to work tomorrow in a pharmacy. And several years ago, about 30 years ago, it became obvious to me that natural medicine had some benefit and patients didn't know where to go. In fact, patients were asking me questions 30 years ago, and I couldn't answer. They asked me drug information questions, I could answer and knew where to look it up. But if they asked me natural medicine questions, I didn't know. And so I began a little journey of exploring. And it really is a question and answer kind of approach that I've taken. What do I need to know? How am I going to learn to know? How will I learn it? And does it make sense from my pharmacy and my chemistry background? So this is a few of the things that my icons, mine also could be updated also. I currently work at Santa Monica Homeopathic Pharmacy. That's an internationally famous pharmacy where I get to not dispense except a few prescriptions a week and mostly just talk to people, patients, doctors, acupuncturists, variety nurses, anybody who needs help, mostly to keep patients safe. I'd like to end there with about me. I'd like you to get to know me by what I present to you today. I've culled what I think is really important that I want to share with you. And so please enjoy the rest of this program. Oh, let's have the next slide because that just ties in. So Dr. Swathi and I started even before she came to Los Angeles. She called me and said she was interested in learning about natural medicine. Her school didn't have a program for it, didn't have any classes in it. And so I said, yes, she came. And I'm going to find that piece of scratch paper where I drew what I wanted the infographic to be. And Dr. Swathi, with her creativity, just put it into this. This is, I think, the second or third iteration. But what this shows is just a sampling of the different modalities that we have as options for patients. And that includes prescription drugs. It includes no products at all. And over the years, 30 years that I've been doing integrative practice, I interchange what I use for any particular person and for educating any particular healthcare professional. So throughout this evening, we will touch on many of them. I don't think we're going to get to any movement tonight, but that's real important too. We may take a break halfway through because sitting is not what we're supposed to be doing. And so we may just take a little stretch break later. Thank you. And then the next slide, I still have the piece of paper where I scratched that. I thought, how am I going to classify and teach about these important phytochemicals that are not on the nutrition facts, yet are very important physiologically, psychologically, of tremendous interest to someone who's a chemist and pharmacist? Me. And I find it's very interesting for a wide variety of either healthcare professionals or healthcare consumers. And I think the two new additions that we put in the upper right, we added cannabinoids because our first year together, Dr. Swathi and I learned a lot about cannabinoids. We went from nothing to something in that first year. It was very intense. And then on the upper left, fibers. Fibers belongs there too. That is the newest addition to the nutrition fact and very, very important. All right. Okay, good. And Dr. Swathi, you're going to talk about this wonderful thing that we did together.
Sure. Yeah. So during my residency with Dr. Charlo, so after I graduated, moved to LA, this is one of the things that we're most proud of is that we worked with two students who not only, you know, one of them came for an appy rotation first while I was a resident, and then he actually requested to come back with another student to do this paper. And so not only did we have it published in an academic journal, we also had it presented at two different conferences, actually. And so really what this was diving into, and this was a part of the entire journey of Dr. Charlo and myself learning about CBD, and not only that, you know, the science behind it, which we'll get into a very, very brief intro to that, because I can't do a webinar without talking about it. So there'll be a little bit about it in a bit. But, you know, really, this one was to dive into the patient perception of CBD use, because at the time when we published this, there was really not that much information out there about it. And so we actually got to do, for the most part, in-person participant surveys with a lot of different customers that were coming into the pharmacy. And so it was a cross-sectional study where we asked specific questions on what drugs the participants were taking and whether or not they were interested in including CBD and how comfortable they felt speaking with their pharmacist. And this was kind of one of the pivotal big moments for me where I realized that it was so important that there be more pharmacists, not only in the medical cannabis space, but in the botanical medicine space in general, because there was this overall perception from consumers that they did not need to disclose this kind of information to their healthcare professional. And I believe the statistic was 6.3% of users discuss CBD with their pharmacist, which if you look at the N, was only one person out of the 29 people we spoke to. And so it really solidified my interest in going and pursuing this role in education, whether it's consumer education or HCP education, really focused on botanical medicine. So that kind of brings us to why we created Integrative Health 101. You know, as I was going through the residency, and we were really thinking about how can we bring this information to more people, we found that, you know, when people would reach out to us, people, by people, I mean healthcare providers or other students, other residents, they wanted to learn about this information because they were getting questions from their patients. And so they wanted to be the best healthcare providers they could be. They wanted to practice at the top of their license, but they realized that there wasn't a lot of great information out there. And by great information, I mean there are awesome long courses that are multi-year certification included, but unfortunately very costly. And so that's pretty prohibitive for, you know, a new practitioner, for example, who has loans or has a lot of different things on their plate with family or with other things going on in their life. And then the flip side of that was that people would ask for resources. And it's like, absolutely, we can send you a list of our 10 favorite resources, which we ended up putting together another infographic on our favorite resources. And we would send that to other people because they didn't have, you know, either the funds or the time to devote to the, you know, the set courses that were, you know, 3-4 year long remote courses and sometimes in person. So they would go the self-teaching route. And so we were thinking there has to be something in between where we can provide tangible tips and tricks for healthcare providers that are looking to integrate some of this information into what they do now and to really amplify their practice. So it's not a replacement, but rather an amplification of what you already learned in pharmacy school and using a lot of those same principles, just applying them to new information. And so that's really why we created it, is because of the influx of questions from pharmacists, from other providers, and from patients, and us just realizing that there was really no in-between. Dr. Charla, do you want to add anything to that?
I think that's said very well. And I think that also what we try to provide individually and collectively with this course and this evening, definitely in my part, is just a context for all this. I found that when I was trying to consume this information, that unless I had a framework or a context, it would just be more information thrown at me. But we have continually shown different ways of incorporating it into what you're interested in and what your practice is at whatever level. Okay. The worst thing that can happen is that the patient doesn't tell you what they're taking and you try to make a clinical judgment or suggestion based on that. The second worst thing that can happen is that you'll take little tidbits tonight and take it into your practice tomorrow. Please don't. Make sure that you have it right. there's a lot of subtleties to this information and how it's used. So please use professional discretion and look up everything that sounds funny or you've never heard of before. That's what I did. I would be listening to lectures and I would just say, is that true? Oh, it is true. Is that not true? I don't know. So please use your discretion. Any products or drugs that I may talk about this evening are for educational purposes only. One of the benefits of the job that I have, the position at the pharmacy, is that we have, 50 or 60 different brands that we sell with access to hundreds. And so I can pick and choose. And sometimes I pick and choose things in an educational program for educational reasons, to make a point, a learning point. Okay, go on. Here's where I like to start. I like to start with how things are regulated. And much of what we'll be talking about this evening are dietary supplements. Supplements, as you know it, vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, herbs, animal extracts, and probiotics. We could also put omegas on there, but this is from the FDA website. And these are regulated. Don't let anyone tell you that dietary supplements aren't regulated. They are regulated, but not like prescription drugs. And there's no pre-marketing that FDA approves or disapproves. So they're put on the market without the FDA, quote, approving them, but they are regulated. So let's go on. And they are regulated with structure function claims. So a product is allowed to say a very general function that it does in the body or a structure for the body. Now, when we talk about homeopathy, that's going to be a little different. I am not speaking about homeopathy like Arnica Montana. I'm speaking about dietary supplements. And I found and find that the more rigor one knows how things are regulated, the easier it is to know how they might be useful and what they're allowed to claim. So, for example, a product could claim that it's good for bladder health, but it can't say it's for a bladder infection. Only approved drugs can say that, and some OTCs. I could speak the rest of the evening on structure function, but we have to go on. Not everyone is interested as I am. And the next slide, please.
Yeah, it's loading.
Okay. Actually, we can just go beyond that next slide. I don't need that one because that's just that's from one of my continuing education. But if someone were interested in when you get the slides, you can look and see where the pre-market, post-market, all companies that make supplements or homeopathic or anything that we sell in our pharmacy has to have good manufacturing practices. And that just is a given. The regulations for those practices is different depending on what group of products that we're talking about. I find when I speak to physicians about this and a few other things that I'll mention, it makes them calm down a little because we're not expecting a lot of these natural products to be drugs. There's great things about drugs. I use them. I love them. It's my profession, but they've got their limitations. So these are the topics. A few of these we're going to mention this evening in our course. That was a fun conversation with Dr. Swathi. What do you want to talk about? What do you want to talk about? I think we had 25 in our first list.
But oh my gosh, or more.
Or more, right. And so we just narrowed it down to this, and I'm going to say a couple of words about each of them in the yellow, which were the lectures that I did. And one of the points with homeopathy, extremely important, I've given many educations on homeopathy, is to understand what it is and what it isn't, and how it can be, how it is different from conventional drugs, dietary supplements, and essential oils. First and foremost, with anyone that I educate, we must know the differences. And then there are some similarities. In fact, they can be used together in some cases, yes, and in some cases not. Vitamins and minerals, those are key nutrients. We get them from food. There may be reasons to take higher doses or to supplement with those. I guess I'm going to not read this. You can read this when you get it. I'd rather go over to my slides and start talking about this. But this is the central question for me and my why. If you've read the book, start with why. I'll tell you my why. My why is to be able to be transparent and answer my patients' questions or their doctor, their practitioner's questions. And they do ask, and I will never, ever forget about 30 years ago, the two questions that were asked of me that I had no idea. I now know how to answer those, plus a lot more. So patients are asking questions. Should I use CBD? Is green tea safe? Why would I want to use arnica? Is it okay? Can I take that after surgery? Can I take this drug with that supplement? There's a lot of questions. And having a framework of knowing how to answer those is important. And I don't know, I'll get back to you is one of my favorite answers. But sometimes what I will do is just talk to the patient about why they're asking. I have found many, many times that my patients ask me about natural medicines when what they really want to do is discuss their pharmaceuticals. I like to know why they're looking beyond or instead of their pharmaceuticals. Oh, that's another disclaimer. I never, ever suggest any natural product instead of a medication that's needed. And if their doctor has prescribed it, we must assume that it's needed. I will have a discussion with them about what the medication is and what the natural product, how the natural products may go together with it or not. And the last thing is also pretty important besides the safety. Definitely that's my other why, is to keep people safe. But who will you refer them to? I am not ashamed at all to say, I'm not sure, please see this cannabis expert, or I'm not sure, go to this doctor. And it's fun to network in the natural medicine industry, functional medicine, natural medicine, integrative, a lot of nice people to work with. So if you can go on to the next.
I just wanted to say something quickly. So I think that this question is so important. In particular, you know, it's thinking about this list of questions, but it just happened the other day when I was working with someone and they requested, for example, that they wanted to take CBD. But to dive in deeper, look at their medication list, look at their current supplement list, look at their herbs that they're already taking, and then actually ask them, why do you want to take CBD, was eye-opening. And then I was able to say, you know, CBD is actually not the right choice for you, because they were looking to use CBD for appetite stimulation, whereas CBD is actually known to have, you know, suppression, or, you know, there are some research to support it having the suppressive effects, versus THC is what actually you would use for stimulation. So it's like things like this, where you can't just be asked the question and you can't just answer it without really figuring out why they're interested and even incorporating this brand new element into their regimen.
Absolutely true. And I have found, as many others probably have, the more broadly I'm familiar with different products and different ways of using them, the more I can engage in this conversation. The patient trusts me, or the doctor trusts me. Sure, I've heard about that. Yeah, I may not necessarily agree with it, but I've heard about it, and I'm willing to enter into a 30-second discussion or a 30-minute, depending on the practice model and the amount of time that I have. But it's really fun at work to finesse this, to be able to find out very quickly what a patient needs or what a clinician needs, and they like it, and then they open up more. Okay, thank you. That was, it's foremost. So this is a beautiful Venn diagram that one of my students created to show that there's a relationship between drugs, both the RX and the OTC, the prescription, and the Tylenol, Benadryl type drugs, and homeopathic medicines, which are completely different from that in some ways. But if you'll see in the center, and dietary supplements, there is an overlap. And the main overlap between all of these modalities is that they have to have good manufacturing, and they have to present the right information to the public that the FTC regulates, and that each company that produces any of these products has to have a system of pharmacovigilance so that if a consumer has a problem, they have an 800 number they can call. And there's other things that where there's overlap about what can make claims, no claims of dietary supplements. But this is my way of putting that all together. And the more you study with me, the more I'll refer back to this so that we know what we're talking about. Because have you ever been in a conversation about a product and you're sort of talking about the same thing, but not really? And so languaging is real important to me. As a scientist, as a practitioner, and as a mentor, I don't expect the person I'm talking to have the right language. I need to have that. And by the way, I learned that from my meditation teacher, because that's how he teaches meditation. Very rigorous languaging. I think we can go to the next slide. Okay. If I had the next hour just to myself, which I don't, we could do this whole quiz, but now it's time for some participation. So doing your best guess, get your chat ready. More than one option could be true. What would you answer for something called number one, Arnica Montana 6C? Homeopathic medicine, a conventional prescription drug, a dietary supplement, essential oil, or food? And in my classes, guessing is okay. You can be wrong. It's better to be wrong in a learning situation than in a professional situation. Okay, we're getting some answers here. Great. A homeopathic. All right, we're starting off with an easy one. And there's many ways you would know that. And Arnica Montana, every healthcare professional, I believe, should feel comfortable with it. All right, so let's end that chat. And what about number two? How would you classify magnesium glycinate? Your patients are asking about it. Okay. Great. All right. Wonderful. And if you're not sure, that's fine. If there's time at the end to ask, you're welcome to. I cannot tell you how important it is for me to have this kind of scaffolding so that I can take in and communicate about all these varied products. Now, magnesium could get a little complicated. I put glycinate for a reason. That's a teaching moment. But if I just put magnesium, it might have been A, because the starting material of homeopathics is minerals. Now, it wouldn't be magnesium glycinate. It would be other forms of magnesium, naturally occurring magnesium. Magnesium glycinate, by the way, is not a naturally occurring. Both sides are natural, but it's a magnesium mineral that's fused with a glycine amino acid, and it's put together like that to improve absorption. The gut doesn't want to take in things that come from the ground, dirt. Plants take up dirt, but we take up things that are chelated or attached to organic molecules, and that gets absorbed better. So that's why somebody might choose magnesium glycinate for better absorption than magnesium oxide, which is more like dirt. Let's see, we can't do them all. How many more do I get, Dr. Swathi?
Oh, at least two more. At least two more.
Okay. Well, let's do number four. What's the answer to number four? I better clear my chat so I see. Okay, what would you say lavender oil would be? Okay, we're getting mostly D, essential oil. Yes, essential oils, of course. I have my aromatherapy right by me, specially chosen to. This one's a more of a grounding one. So absolutely. Now, essential oils, I didn't mention it on that Venn diagram, but those are not part of those three different categories. It was up in the right corner. Essential oils are regulated by the FDA according to as cosmetics. So that's a different regulation. Unless, of course, the answer to number four is also possibly C. It's also a dietary supplement, because while essential oils are usually just smelled or put in a carrier oil and put on the body or put in the bath, essential oils can be taken orally. In a bottle like this, no, unless it the manufacturer states it could be very dangerous to consume many drops of this. But there are various companies, supplement companies, that have created essential oils that are encapsulated in soft gels. For example, there is a product by Integrative Therapeutics that is lavender oil in a soft gel, which is outstanding for anxiety. In fact, it was prescribed to me by my, or suggested to me by my naturopathic oncologist when I finished treatment a few months ago and I started having anxiety. Like, where'd this come from? And so she suggested that. And also for digestion, there are some companies that have encapsulated essential oils that can be helpful for digestion. So I did want to mention that. And oh, we're going to do 6 and 7. And 9. We'll go really fast. Okay, I promise. There'll still be time. And to the, I might just have to skip my other slides or go back to them at the end. We're going to, about 6 o'clock, we're going to talk about our, we'll give you some other information, but then we can come back to this. So I do want you to, number 6, please put in the chat the classification A through E. Oh, we could have done number 4 as a food too, because you could put some lavender leaves and they contain oil. Oh, there's always learning, always, always learning. Okay, so we're getting, yes, A, homeopathic medication, Hypericum perforatum, right, good. Used for nerve pain, wonderful for nerve pain. And 7 is C. Right. St. John's wort is a dietary supplement. Herbs are considered dietary supplements. Who knows, and you can put it in the chat, what the botanical name for number 7 is, what the botanical name for St. John's wort is. Let's see if anyone wants to be brave. I know you could look it up. So should I give you the answer? The answer, what the botanical name is, it's Hypericum perforatum. Hypericum perforatum homeopathic is a homeopathic preparation of St. John's wort, the herb. Now, the contrast is huge. This is her Hypericum perforatum 30C, which means it's diluted one part into 99 succussed. Take one part into 99 succussed. That's done 30 times. That is so little original material that there's no molecules in it. One might say, like I did for about the first 15 years, how could homeopathy work if there's none of the original molecules? Hence, the reason to really spend an hour, 2 hour, 5 hours on homeopathy to understand it's more of an energetic rather than a material way of healing. There's a whole system to it. It's not just the homeopathic medicines. Whereas St. John's wort is in the 300 milligram amount. That's an herbal product that has been studied for mild to moderate depression. 300 milligrams and Hypericum perforatum 30C are so vastly different in concentration that they can be used for different things. And they also have a different safety profile. While St. John's wort is involved with, can be involved with many drug interactions, at the 30C level, there's almost no chance, if not no chance, that a homeopathic medicine will interact with a pharmaceutical. Now, I'm so used to teaching students, I must stop here and say, do not take this into practice tomorrow if it's the first time you've heard it. Let it marinate and think about it, find out, ask others, study with us. And I'm very convinced every time I say that. And that's what I do at work. Last one will be number 9.
Ooh, before you do number 9, Anne has a great question. So she just wanted clarification. So that will lessen the drug interactions.
And that's a good question. Because it's at the 30C dilution, there is no molecules of the original St. John's wort material. Therefore, it is almost impossible, if not impossible, that it can have a pharmacokinetic interaction. change the absorption of the drug, the distribution of the drug, especially the metabolism. If you know about St. John's wort, you're worried about metabolism and excretion. This is a concept that I did not get the first time I was told this, or the 10th time or the 100th time. I needed to roll it over in my mind and hear it a lot of different ways. But this is an intro evening, and I just wanted to toss it out there. I'd say the first 5 years at Santa Monica Homeopathic, I didn't include this kind of information. I just wasn't sure. And there's hoops to jump through, and it's a learning curve. But thank you for asking that. That's very important. Okay, we ready to go on to CBD? Yeah. How would you characterize CBD? Homeopathic medicine, conventional prescription drug, dietary supplement, essential oil, food. Could be more than one. It's okay to guess. Very good. Yep. Interesting that you would consider it a food. Yes, because it can be in food, although usually don't eat just isolated CBD. So it is a dietary supplement, and it is also a prescription drug. Yes, it is definitely a prescription drug. It's Epidiolex, which is the first, that was my entree into cannabinoid medicine. They were making a prescription drug, so I needed to know about them. I needed to know about it. There's so many classes of drugs since I graduated in 1981 that I've had to learn about. And Epidiolex was yet another one. And it was very nice. The medical liaison for the company that made that drug sat down with Dr. Swathi and I a few times for a couple of hours. It was very, very hard to understand the endocannabinoid system. And I don't think I can be an effective pharmacist talking about any of the phytocannabinoids or anything with the cannabinoid system unless I know what that whole system is. Oh, great. Thank you. Okay. I've spent a lot of time on that slide and may have used up my whole time. I have. So let's just go through my next slides quickly. Thank you for your participation. I always overstuff my presentations with slides in case I don't get participation, but you did. And so I thank you. This is kind of a consultation guide about homeopathic medicines. And I think the things that I want to mention with this one, the most dangerous, I don't even think I put it on here. The most dangerous part of homeopathic medicines, which have almost no dangers, is that someone might use one instead of a needed medicine. If a medicine is indicated and it's needed, it should be taken. But sometimes medications don't do everything patients want, or even the prescribers want, and sometimes you get side effects. So I have found homeopathic medicines to be very, very good companions to pharmacotherapy. And I certainly found that when I was going through treatment, that I would take the medications that my doctor prescribed that has gotten rid of my breast cancer, and then I took some homeopathic medicines quite frequently for the side effects so that I could continue with all the treatment that was necessary. Let's go on to the next slide.
So Wes actually has a quick question. Yes. They're wondering, can it also be taken wrong?
Good question. Very little chance that you can take it wrong.
Or in the wrong combination with other homeopathic, I think they mean medications.
Wes, I'd really like you to unmute. I'd like you to ask you what you mean by homeopathic supplements. Do you mean dietary supplements or homeopathic medicines?
Well, I meant both homeopathic medicines or with certain supplements, combining homeopathic medicines with certain supplements can have bad reactions too, correct? Are you able to hear me?
Yes, I'm able to hear you. I'm trying to think. It's a perfect question, and I want to answer that in the best way. At the level that I practice and that I teach homeopathy, there's very little chance that you can do anything wrong. That mostly at the level that I practice and teach it, it just won't do anything. You are not gonna endanger any mechanism of action of any pharmaceutical by taking a homeopathic at the same time. Now, the drug may prevent the homeopathic from working, but that's a little more nuanced than even the level that I work at the pharmacy. So the worst thing, as I said at the beginning, is that someone would use a homeopathic medicine or even a dietary supplement instead of what they need. But you really can't go wrong. And it's best often to try the homeopathics at the beginning of the onset of symptoms and see if it helps. My colleagues that are trained homeopaths, they go to school and get a certificate they go to school for 4 years. They have clinical rounds, et cetera. At the level they practice, there may be some unwanted reactions, but those don't necessarily mean that they're dangerous. But that, again, is a little more nuanced than I practice. Okay, good. Let's just skip this. This is just an orientation to vitamin minerals. I already talked about minerals. This slide, as it loads, just shows you when it comes to omegas, my students and I always have really good discussions about omegas. That's what they're working on this week. They can be by prescription, Vascepa and Lovaza, and their generics. You can get omegas from lots of different foods, and you can get the non-prescription, which are the dietary supplements. So patients that don't want to take a supplement can increase their food. Those who don't want to or can't increase their food intake or have special reason to take high amounts of omegas can take a dietary supplement. Thank you. And go on to the next one. This is my little holiday gift for you. In case you haven't heard of L-theanine, this is an amino acid, one of my favorites. It is an amino acid that lowers frantic brain waves. So anytime somebody is stressed and they have their mind that's whirling, or their mind is whirling and they can't concentrate, L-theanine is a very safe and easy to take amino acid that can help with daytime concentration, and it can help at nighttime to help kind of calm down, get ready for sleep. It's not a sedative. It doesn't make you drowsy. It just helps the mind to relax. And I think a little later, we're going to have a discussion or some facts about matcha tea. It's quite prominent in matcha tea. Then go on to the next one. Yeah, I think that's mostly what I was talking about. Definitely one of my favorites for stress. Oh, it's Kate, and you can go on. Almost every one of my presentations has a picture of David Crow, who's an acupuncturist. He was my first natural doctor, and he treated me in three different ways. At the time, 30 years ago, I was getting recurrent colds, flus, even had pneumonia twice in a year as I was going through a divorce. A lot of stuff was happening 30 years ago. And David treated me with traditional Chinese medicine, which meant needles and herbs and also lifestyle. He helped me change my diet to eat in a way that I would not produce as much phlegm, which was fantastic. I had gone the Western route for all my phlegm and it didn't really work. He also treated me with Ayurvedic medicines and principles, as we'll be hearing a little bit about later. And then thank you, David, for treating me with essential oils. He is the one who discussed with me and literally got under my skin, not just the needles, but his concepts about what plant medicine can do. And he was at that time a little more polarized. Plant medicine, not conventional medicine, but I presented with him recently and he's kind of come to the middle, and he can see also where there's roles for both, and the savvy professional and consumer knows when to take what and when. We can go on. You'll get a copy of this, but always use professional discretion. I have to go with the safeties first, not for internal consumption. Be careful with vulnerable groups. Vulnerable groups are those that have airway disease, those that have seizure disorders, those that have migraines, people that are frail. I don't like to say elderly, because some of us may fit that demographic, but we don't feel elderly, those that are frail at any age, pregnant women, lactating women, and babies and children. And if you use it on the skin, please dilute. Here is my 2 minutes on drug interactions. Oh, Dr. Swathi, I'm not leaving you much time. But I think as far as drug interactions, drug, herb, nutrient interactions, both the wanted and the unwanted, because sometimes taking a nutrient along with a drug is actually prescribed by guidelines. Many examples of that. I believe it's important to have a framework. And so in my classes and in my rotations, we go over the framework for ascertaining whether it is a theoretical risk or a probable risk, or whether in the risk to benefit ratio, whether it's worth it. Because if you Google some of this information, besides getting conflicting information, look at 3 websites, you'll get 4 answers. You don't know what to do. It really depends on the patient in front of you and what the risk might be to them and how well they're listening and looking at you. Because if somebody's off looking like this when I'm saying it may increase their blood pressure, I'm going to end up saying, no, don't take it. And so there's that art of working with the patient on that. This is for the end. If you want to stay at the end, I'm happy to explain this one slide that we put together, that I've put together over the years, that I will assume that natural products are safe if they're well manufactured and they're taking according to manufacturer guidelines, unless the patient is on these medications or has these conditions. And that's not everybody that comes into our pharmacy. Probably only about half of the people come into our pharmacy. That gives me the mental space to not worry that these are all going to be dangerous for everyone. They're well-made and used appropriately. They're probably not going to lead to trouble unless somebody is on this list. And I've highlighted coagulation and platelet medication, transplant patients, anything that has to do with their immune system, surgery, pregnancy, lactation. We could talk an hour about that, but maybe if we have time at the end, we can come back to this slide. Okay.
All right. I'm trying to go to the next slide. I want to see if it will let me.
We got a question about what sources. I don't think we have a slide in this deck about what our sources is, but we do have some information we can get for you. I mean, that's kind of the secret sauce, is knowing where to look quickly. And that was cumbersome at the beginning. Okay, I'm going on mute now. Now you get to hear Dr. Swathi. Thank you.
Sure, yeah. And I'm so glad we're able to dive into so many of those. And I loved the interactive, you know, slide there where everyone was providing their insight. That was awesome. So, you know, now we're going to hop to some of the course modules that I cover. And so one of the things I guess we haven't fully discussed yet, but in the course, we kind of split up all the topics, you know, all the ones we narrowed down to anyway, all of the 10 topics, and we split them in half. And so Dr. Charlo is the one that lectures on those 5 topics. And she gave kind of a mini brief, you know, intro to all those 5 or most of those 5 topics. And then I specifically have 1-hour lectures on these 5 topics. And so what we're going to do now in the limited time we have, but we're going to make the most of it, is that we're just going to talk through some of the slides and concepts that I have that are within the categories of adaptogens. So really leaning on the adaptogenic herbs. We're going to talk through a superfood. We're going to talk a little bit about cannabinoids within, you know, medical cannabis. We're going to talk a little bit about Ayurveda, and I'm not sure we're going to have time for a little bit of, you know, active movement or, you know, meditation or rest, but let's just go right to it. So, you know, in the superfood section, we're really thinking about what is the evidence-based perspective on why we should incorporate these different superfoods. And so these are just a few of the, you know, slides on one of the superfoods that I cover. I'm so excited that Dr. Charlo kind of already gave you an intro as her Christmas present about L-theanine. And so a lot of the information on the top right-hand corner, we've reviewed a little bit. So a little bit about, you know, sustained energy, focus and attention, and the fact that it is, of course, an amino acid that is wonderful for calm alertness without the crash is kind of its, you know, slogan. I mean, not its real slogan, the slogan that I gave it. And so that's one of the active components. There's also EGCG, which is a wonderful molecule. Let me see if I have the, yep, I have it right here. So EGCG, you can see on the bottom kind of middle of the screen. And so that is within the category of flavanols or catechins in particular. And so you can see that it is a dietary phytochemical, and that it has been researched for these particular qualities of neuroprotection, potential benefit in cardiovascular disease, as well as chemoprotective aspects of it. And so a lot more research is needed there, but really fascinating to think about, you know, something that a lot of us, you know, might have even drank earlier today, whether if it was matcha or sencha green tea, that, you know, it's something that we actually are getting benefits from that we didn't even know about. And that's kind of one of the focuses of the superfood section, is it might be things you're already doing, or it might be things that your patients are already consuming. But if we're able to provide this scientific basis and perspective as to why that's an important thing for someone to incorporate, whether or not they're already doing it, I think that's a great next step. All right. And we talked about this slide. Okay, and then did you know? Love talking about, so within my slides, I always have a did you know or a recipe or different things as they pertain to each slide, each, you know, collection of slides. And so for this one, caffeine content, really interesting. A serving of matcha is only half a teaspoon, and that has shown to have, you know, 30 to maybe 45 grams or milligrams of caffeine. Whereas, you know, a serving of coffee, you know, 8 ounces of coffee or even espresso has upwards of 100 milligrams of coffee. So not only is that fascinating that a serving of both is so, you know, differentiated in terms of the amount of caffeine, also so interesting, I don't have it on the screen, but the curve in which the caffeine actually is metabolized and works in the body is also really interesting and different. Because caffeine, if you see the curve, it just goes straight up and straight down pretty much, which is why, you know, you feel like almost instantaneously within the first 30 minutes, you're like, just buzzed off, you know, a coffee product, especially if it's, of course, not decaf, if it's a full, you know, normal coffee product, you oftentimes feel, you know, within the first 30 minutes, you get that spike. And then after that, it tapers off and you almost have a crash afterwards. So you might have jitters associated with that spike and then you have the crash. And so a lot of people have kind of shifted to matcha, not only for the nutritional benefits and for, you know, L-theanine, EGCG, and some of the other, you know, bioflavonoids and vitamins and minerals that are in it, but also for the fact that the way that, you know, matcha is metabolized in the body. So it's actually more of a curve like this. I hope you can see that. So it's more of a dome shape. And so it doesn't come on as quickly. You're not going to consume a normal serving of matcha and all of a sudden feel a hit like you would with coffee. But it's more of that idea of the sustained focus. And I think a lot of that comes from the L-theanine content in it. All right. And so this is just a bit more information, you know, kind of, again, thinking about the tips and tricks. So, you know, when you're going to buy, are you going to buy culinary versus ceremonial? Answer, ceremonial always. And then there's some other information here on the right side of the screen. All right. And so I also want to give some brief information as well about Ayurveda. So, you know, what is Ayurveda? It really is a lifestyle. It's a traditional system of medicine in India. It's thought to be one of the oldest systems in the world, so the oldest methodologies of medicine. And it's really putting lifestyle at the front and center of everything. So thinking about how the mind and body are inextricably connected, and that there's nothing more powerful than the mind. So it's everything that you do in your daily life that comes into the concept of Ayurveda. And so, you know, we don't have a lot of time to talk about, you know, the doshas and everything, but just wanted to give a little bit of background that you all can review, given that you're getting all the slides. But the way that Ayurveda works is that there's kind of three different doshas or mind-body types. And each one of these types really has a designated, you know, recommendation list of, you know, type of movement that might suit you the best, type of foods that might suit you the best, and, you know, really ways that can help you improve your overall lifestyle and therefore enhance longevity, which is super important. I know longevity is all the rage right now, but you know, it's been all the rage in Ayurveda for, you know, thousands of years. And I love to see that people are now thinking about, okay, it's really more of this, you know, whole person holistic approach of this incorporation of different lifestyle strategies that are changing things slowly but surely to then optimize rather than, you know, a quick fix. Okay, and then now we are talking a little bit about phytocannabinoids. So one of my favorite topics, although honestly, I got very lucky with the top five that I'm, you know, presenting on in Integrative Health 101. They're my five favorite topics. And so, you know, talking about phytocannabinoids, we know at least that there are over 120 unique phytocannabinoids. So why are we referring to them as phytocannabinoids? Because phyto is the prefix, phyto meaning from a plant. So these are cannabinoids that are found actively, naturally occurring in the cannabis plant. And we know about, you know, 120 plus of them. It's really interesting though, right? Because CBD and THC get all the buzz, they get all the media. And I think about different phytocannabinoids. We have a few of the most common ones on the bottom of the screen here. I always describe them as siblings. So, you know, if you think about like the Jackson 5 or, you know, the Brady Bunch, you know, they're all super important, but they're all different and they all have different use cases. And so, you know, CBD and THC, yes, are the most popular of the siblings in the media and everything, but it doesn't mean that the other ones are any less important or any less, you know, potentially therapeutic for different use cases. And one of the other concepts here is the entourage effect. So it's this idea that a lot of these cannabinoids really synergize and work beautifully together rather than isolating them separately. And then a little bit more on CBD. You might not know, but CBD is considered not psychoactive. So that means that, or rather non-psychoactive, has been the terminology for years. And that has gone to mean that it's not, you know, technically the term psychoactive means it's not active in the brain, which we now know from research, given the CB1 and CB2 receptor, which we can't dive into too much today, but given now that we know more about the mechanism, it actually is active in the brain. But that being said, it doesn't mean that it, you know, provides feelings of euphoria or feelings of, you know, feeling like you're high. But it does actually still work in the brain. So now the new terminology that we use in the scientific space talking about medical cannabis is non-intoxicating, almost equating it more with alcohol. So, you know, it is actually, so CBD does have, you know, benefits in the brain, but it's non-intoxicating, meaning that it's not going to give you a high. And I have some of the most, you know, if we look at the expansiveness of the research that is, you know, prevalent for CBD, for cannabinoids, the top, you know, 5 to 6 use cases I have on the screen here. So pain, inflammation, epilepsy, anxiety, and sleep. One of the things that I think is so interesting about CBD as we've uncovered more information since 1960 to now, so in the past, you know, 50, 60 plus years, is it actually has a non-cannabinoid receptor mechanism. So it actually targets a lot of these other receptors that we already know about from the way that we have learned in either pharmacy school, medical school, nursing school, that, you know, there are other targets that we've already learned about through other medications. And so CBD actually works on some of these same drug targets. And then I have a little bit of information here on THC. I'm not going to do a super big deep dive just in the interest of time, but you will be getting the slide. And of course, you'll also be getting our email. So do not hesitate to email me. And really the key difference for you to know from this presentation is that THC is considered quote unquote psychoactive or intoxicating. And so if a patient is not interested in any sort of, you know, like even possibility of feelings of euphoria or being high, I would not recommend THC. And there are a lot of great products out there that don't use any THC at all. So if you have any questions, please do not hesitate to reach out. And then, as I mentioned before, you know, cannabinoids are like a bunch of siblings. So here are some other examples of the other, you know, siblings that are now becoming more famous, but haven't been famous as, you know, super recently. All right. So thank you so much for still staying here. I know we did send the invite from, you know, 8 to 9:30, but we did want to see how much can we fit within an hour and then give that kind of extra 30 minutes just in case. So I really appreciate that most of you have stayed with us. That's awesome. So the role of the healthcare professional, you know, some of the takeaways from today really come down to the fact that there is research on integrative medicine. And I think that through our discussion of a few of the topics that we cover in our course, you can see that there is research out there and that we do practice from an evidence-based and an evidence-informed perspective. But that being said, we do still need more human studies. And so it is something that we're constantly keeping up on. And it's, I mean, one of my favorite, you know, reasons to be in the integrative space is that there's always new research coming out that can help us better inform how to make decisions when working with patients, especially when it comes to safety and efficacy. And, you know, there is some conflicting information. And so with that conflicting information, we have to take into account clinical discretion and keeping in mind that everything should have this individualized and personalized approach. And I actually realized, Dr. Charlo, we didn't talk about one of the key things that, you know, that we always talk about with integrative medicine and integrative health pharmacy is this idea of patient-centered shared decision-making. And that, you know, we as integrative pharmacists, we always work with the patient and keep the patient at the center of every discussion. And so really what this means is serving as, you know, an educational guide for them. And, you know, if someone comes to us and says, we have an issue with sleeping, you know, the first thing, of course, as pharmacists is, you know, I always say, what medications are you taking? What supplements are you taking? What herbs are you taking? Tell me a little bit about your lifestyle, a little bit about your stress. And then we assess, is it right for us to recommend they add something to that regimen? Or is it the right step to then talk about sleep hygiene or maybe therapeutic aromatherapy or some strategies that they can incorporate throughout their day to maybe walk a little bit more so they tire themselves a little bit more before they go to bed? And there's so many different ways that we can approach each patient. So it's really trying to figure out what is going to resonate best with them and what's going to resonate most with their treatment goals. Because the last thing we want is to give recommendations to, you know, a shift worker who works all night to talk about sleep hygiene, because it's not really going to fit if they're sleeping during the day. So that's a little bit about, you know, the way that we view everything. And again, as Dr. Charlo mentioned earlier, it's all about the risk versus benefit ratio. Every decision I make as an integrative pharmacist always comes back to that, thinking about the patient. Does the benefit outweigh the risk? And by how much does it outweigh the risk is always the decision that I'm thinking about.
And to add on to that, good point about the shared decision making. Patients really appreciate that when you're familiar with the thing they're thinking of taking. Because it's not just me recommending. Every day at work, people bring a new bottle and say, "Is this good? I've never seen it before, but is it good?" And I like to find out what they're hoping it will do for them. I ask that question a lot. That's a very revealing question. What are you hoping that this does for you? Or what are you hoping my suggestion would do? And sometimes I'm not the final authority on the risk versus the benefit. I can inform them of the risks and I can inform them of the benefits, but ultimately they need to decide, and hopefully in concert with the rest of their healthcare professionals. Very nuanced.
Absolutely. And so if this information was interesting,